This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
The following episode of TOEFOP is rated MA. It may contain Batman references, time travel references, sexual references, lost trains of thought, and mild coarse language. TOEFOP advises that the program is not suitable for anyone under the age of 15 or anyone who enjoys succinct, coherent conversation that might actually have a point. Minors must be accompanied by a parent, guardian, or priest. This is John Deek speaking.
Relax, this is TOEFOP. I'm Charlie Clawson.
Hang on, what's your name? I'm Will Anderson, but what did you just say your name was?
Charlie Clawson. You must have been a dropout. I actually said my name perfectly.
It must have been a dropout because it sounded to me like you said Charlie Clawson.
Yeah, well, I've changed it.
I was just like, I'm fine, absolutely fine with that. Yeah. I respect whatever decisions you want to make about how you identify. Fuck, man. It's a too complicated world to start judging people, but I was like, no, you're right. It probably was just a dropout.
It's not really about gender identification. It's just about how I choose to pronounce my name. That is a thing, right? Like a Ralph Fiennes or... Do you remember my mate David Hofflin, the actor David? He was on Neighbours for a bit. Swedish. It's spelt David, but because his parents are Swedish and they pronounce David David, he called himself David. And I believe... our producer, Sammy Cav, when he was working on Hamish and Andy, they did a beautiful phone prank where they called him up as publicist to have a chat or TV Week reporters or whatever. And they repeatedly referred to him as David. And every time you correct them and call him David, they would just call him David again. And it's because David is a really lovely, polite guy. But this prank went on so well because he just always politely just steered them back to David, but never got angry.
Or angry, as he likes to pronounce it. But, yeah, I mean, anyone who's got the last name Cockburn knows what we're talking about, and they've pronounced it Coburn their entire life. When your name is actually Cockburn, we all see it written down, but I understand also why you don't want your last name pronounced Cockburn. I'm Mr. Cockburn of the famous Burnt Cocks.
Well, it's a very famous street in Edinburgh, is Coburn Street, and the first time I went to Scotland, I got there a day before Jem, and she said, well, just, you know, the hotel where you're staying, everything's walking distance in Edinburgh, why don't you go for a walk around, and there's a really great street, and she told me about Coburn Street, and I completely... forgot how it was pronounced. And so I was walking around and then I saw the sign for Coburn Street. And I went up to one of the Scottish locals and was like, is Cockburn Street where all the shops are? And you know what? The good thing about Scots, Will, is they suffer fools gladly.
Yeah. They were like, you're a bit of a co, to be honest with you. You should suck my co. That's what you should do. One of the funniest ones I ever heard was the football commentator James Brayshaw. Now, for Australian listeners, you might know who James Brayshaw is, JB, a famously over-the-top and exuberant football commentator.
Yes. Speaks out the corner of his mouth when he gets excited, right? Yes! Like that. For no apparent reason. Because his normal speaking voice isn't like that. But when he commentates, it kind of comes out like that, doesn't it?
He was taught to commentate on a pirate ship by pirates. So... always refers to his colleagues as me hearties, which is a weird one as well. Has one hook for a hand, only commentates out of one eye with an eye patch, has a parrot on his shoulder and other pirate references.
Please, go on.
Walks a plank before, has some sort of booty of gold.
Did you say wooden leg?
He has a wooden leg. Sorry, I haven't gone with wooden leg. Definitely has a wooden leg.
Yeah.
Illegally downloads videos and distributes them. All sorts of piracy.
Once took Tom Hanks hostage.
So I think that he was doing an introduction for the footballer who's Ivan Soldo, I believe his name is. He's a Richmond ruckman.
Richmond ruckman.
And he has given him like the sort of introduction you get on one of his radio shows where if you're being introduced by JB, your introduction is... a little bit about you, but it's mostly about convincing the listeners to JB's show that they have access to the absolute best entertainment and sport has to offer as guests. So if you've ever wanted to feel good about your position in the entertainment industry, be a guest on his show, because he will identify you as the biggest, brightest, number one star in the entire world. And so he's giving the same approach, a liberal amount of mayonnaise, to the career of Ivan Soldo, and just talking about how good he is. But of course, introduces him as Ivan Soldo, and he's taken this run up from the boundary. He's given this guy every compliment you could possibly wring out of the quite unexceptional career that Ivan Soldo has actually had as an AFL footballer. And then he gets to Ivan, and then Ivan just comes on and goes, "It's Ivan, actually." Never has the air been taken out of an introduction more than Big Ivan.
I mean, we've talked about this before, but it happens to me a lot. Like, I've done, interview shows and interviews, radio interviews, where people have referred to me as Charlie Clausen. And I'm never sure what to do. I never correct anyone because, as discussed, Clausen is the correct Danish pronunciation of the name. And I can totally understand that if you read that name, you'd think it was pronounced Clausen. But it is Clausen, and I'm always like, should I be standing up for my interpretation? Because it's almost the reverse David. Like, David is stating, he's standing up for his culture, his Swedish culture. He's saying, no, my parents christened me David, I am a David. Whereas I...
You're rejecting your culture. Ashamed of your culture. Yeah, bury your culture deep.
No, I'm not doing anything. I'm being very neutral. My family were ashamed. I think the honest truth is, during the Second World War, you didn't want a name that was Clausen. It just sounded a little too Germanic. And so it became Clausen. It somehow anglicized over time. Americans seem to get it. They pronounce it more like I pronounce it, more than Australians. Australians tend to lean into Clausen more than Americans. But every time I've been in the States, they always seem to call me a Clausen. I don't know if that's because of the most famous Clausen, of course, Alf Clausen, composer of The Simpsons, or if there's a footballer called Jimmy Clausen, who I believe is the other famous Clausen. I think I rank third on the famous Clausen tree. Apart from Denmark, I'm sure there's heaps of famous Clausens in Denmark.
I get, obviously not a mispronunciation because, Will's pretty hard to mispronounce. Actually, that's not true. I worked, again, for 2.5 years with a footballer by the name of Luke Darcy, and he's from Adelaide. And people from Adelaide have a certain, quite proper way of speaking. But it also means often that they pronounce L's as W's. So for 2.5 years, he pronounced my name every day as if it started with a W and ended with a W. Like it was a palindrome. He would call me Will.
Wilwa. Wilwa.
Will.
Wilwa.
Will.
Will. Will.
Yeah.
So Will. Wilwa. So wait a minute. So the hard L is the tongue stays at the front of the mouth. Will. Will. And the W, will, he opens it up or something? Will. No, he puts his lips together.
No, I think he opens and closes it together. Yeah, it's like it's all in the lips.
Will.
Which also was disconcerting as he puckered towards me every morning. Will.
Will. Will. It almost is actually, it's almost if you had a speech impediment and you couldn't say L's properly, you'd say it like will. Will. You can't hit a hard L. You're going, Will, Will. I like Will.
The entire,
I like Will.
The entire of South Australia has the same speech impediment, though.
Well, isn't that what happened in Spain with that king who couldn't pronounce his S's in Barcelona? And that's why they have that kind of, is it the Catalan or where they lisp?
Is that right?
Yeah, I think that's right. A podcast, Mike, can you look up why in Spanish they lisp the S's? I think it's because there was a king or someone who lisped. And rather than embarrass him, everyone else had to start lisping. I mean, that's true power.
There was a famous story about Manuka in Canberra, where they play, football and cricket quite famously. That's why people might know Manuka. But it's spelt Manuka, like the honey might be spelled, but it's pronounced Manuka. And the urban legend, I'm not actually sure if it's true or not, was that the Queen came out for an event and she pronounced it Manuka. And then everybody, not to embarrass the Queen, just started also going, yeah, Manuka. No, we've been getting it wrong up until this point. You nailed it, and now it's Manuka.
Podcast Mike has done a bit of research. It's an urban legend, Charlie. It's been discredited by scholars for lack of evidence. Well, lack of evidence doesn't mean it's not true. It just means they haven't found the evidence yet.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you spent 4 days in Byron Bay, and you've really picked up on the way people think up here.
Yes, we should let people know we were briefly together in the same room the last episode of Topop.
which is actually how you are meant to pronounce it. We haven't wanted to... say anything.
This embarrass anyone. Time,
but it's actually toe pop.
If you noticed a different dynamic with toe pop last week. I mean, toe pop sounds like a variation on K-pop. Toe pop. It's some foot fetishists and K-pop fans. You put them together, you get toe pop.
I'm going to ask you a question.
Go on.
Do you think there are more toe pop fans, so people who listen or have listened to this podcast over the years, versus if you were going to come up with the amount of people who love K-pop but would also love K-pop videos that were only feet, which of those audiences do you think would be better? Because I would suspect there are so many K-pop fans that I reckon their audience for toe video recreations of K-pop hits would be more popular than our podcast.
100%. Like, you could take the smallest, most niche K-pop fan would have 100 times the following that we have. Like, my niece got into K-pop when it first kicked off. That's when I first became aware of it, when about 10 years ago when she was a teenager. And that was the first time I remember feeling like, oh shit, like a generational shift, because she showed me like her favorite acts and music videos and stuff, and I could not make head nor tail of it. Well, I couldn't understand what I was meant to be enjoying. Was it the music? Because that seemed kind of horrible. Was it the choreography? But it was so confusing. There's like 40 people on stage. Was it the individual personalities? Because they all seemed kind of interchangeable to me. I couldn't quite work out which was which. Which one's the Harry Styles? Which one was the, I don't know, who's another guy in One Direction? Liam. Liam. You're going to... Yeah, speaking of which, you're going to love our bonus episode. We recorded a bonus ep, which devolves into a boy band discussion for about 10 or 15 minutes. It's ridiculous. Anyway, K-pop, I couldn't understand it. And then when I got further into it, she came up to Sydney, stayed with my other brother who lives up here, to go to a K-pop festival. My brother took her there and said it was insane, like Beatlemania times a billion.
So if K-pop... is it Korean pop, right?
Yes.
Is that what the K stands for?
Yeah, yes.
Okay. So toe pop would actually, if we're following the, you know, same formula,
yeah,
would actually be from some country or some region that started with T-O. So it would be
Tonga.
Like, if Tonga, yeah, if the country of Tonga suddenly started doing their version of K-pop, it would be called toe pop.
Toe pop. I mean, I think I like the foot fetish angle of that too, because Tongan, you could be in like sandals or barefoot traditionally.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point.
And so you get Quentin Tarantino to direct the music video. I mean, you're going to get all the great shots of the toes in that one.
I mean, that's it, right?
With his foot fetish, that it is now like out in the open. Like, you got Brad Pitt getting awards and making jokes about foot fetish and stuff. It's like, oh, you are a twisted pervert, but we love you. We love you, QT.
Well, I think it's actually he's not being kink shamed anymore, right? Well, he kind of still
he's been kink shamed.
Affectionately so.
Yeah.
But I think now it's been, I would say that initially maybe it's a little bit embarrassing and people are kink shaming a little bit and that's a little bit unfair. But I think now that it's just become so accepted as part of the popular culture and narrative, and there hasn't really been a backlash. There's just an observation of it and an amusement perhaps about it. But there isn't like a whole bunch of people saying Quentin Tarantino is a terrible person because he is obsessed with people's feet. So suddenly this thing that he's had to keep to himself for all these years is out in the open and he can just literally walk the walk and talk the talk.
He's leaning into it. Like, once upon a time in Hollywood, it felt like he was answering back to the fact that everyone makes fun of him for being a foot fetishist. Because normally he's a little more subtle, but these were like very deliberate, very set up shots of dirty feet, clean feet, feet on dashboards, feet going upstairs, all kinds of feet. It was like he was trying to shoot feet from every conceivable angle.
If Quentin Tarantino had shot the human centipede, we wouldn't have been disgusted by it because we would have only seen the feet.
Could you understand a foot fetishist? Could you sort of go, oh yeah, I see that. Like, I can sort of see something kind of sexy or attractive about a foot.
As I've got older, I really am comfortable with the idea that I'm, like, I think when you're younger, you define yourself so much by, I like this and, oh, I'd never be into that or whatever. Mm. Whereas as you get older, you just think, oh, there are so many things that people find interesting or attractive or And who am I to judge? As long as it is consensual and it doesn't hurt anybody else. I'm a bit in that thing now where I remember in my late 20s where your images of what, you know, other people's bodies are meant to look like are so prescribed by the cultural narrative. Like, you know, I remember having a discussion with a really close girlfriend of ours about she had like hair under her arms and how like, you know, I felt like it was disgusting or like gross or whatever. And as I've got older, I'm like, did I? Because I certainly don't now. So either I've changed or at the time I was just saying what I thought it was appropriate to say because that is the image and popular narrative that we were going through then. But as I'm older, I'm like, nah, whatever. Who cares? Whatever people are into, as long as you ask someone and they're also into it and cool with it, then I have no problem with anything. But no, personally, I have never looked at anybody's feet and gone, I don't know.
I can understand a foot being cute because I think feet can be cute. And there's something kind of gentle and affectionate about holding someone's feet or someone putting their feet on you or giving a foot rub or something like that. I can connect from that level. It is that classic conversation from Pulp Fiction, which is, you know, it is a very intimate act to touch someone's feet and feel someone's feet. So I understand that. But aesthetically, they look like those face huggers from Aliens. Like, I have never looked at a foot and gone, that is a perfect foot. Like, that person, male or female, has a perfect foot. Like, I wouldn't even know. I'd like to get a... Actually, if there are any foot fetishists, and this is not... We're not going to kink shame you. I honestly want to know, what makes a good foot? Like, is it about, you know, perfect sort of balance and precision? Like, the toes are all sequentially, like, go up? Or do you need, like, a bigger second toe? Like, what makes a sexy foot?
Well, also, is it anything to do with the connection to the person that the foot is on, right? What's the relationship between you going, hey, I think Margot Robbie is attractive and then I would like to see pictures of Margot Robbie's feet? Because I don't know one way or the other what her feet look like, but you'd imagine if you're an actress or a model or any of those people that maybe are traditionally presented in the media as being the most attractive people, your feet would look like a fucking mess because all you're constantly doing is being jammed into shoes and stuff for runways and red carpets and movies and stuff that are like, you'd imagine that they have, whereas if you're looking for a pristine foot, you know, maybe you're looking for someone who's just slipped it into an Ugg boot every day. You know, it hasn't been damaged by some harsh leather or some weird arches. It's just been kept in this pristine enclosure surrounded by, you know, lamb's wool, you know, soaking up every day. I don't know. What's the perfect foot?
Well, I think that's a great twist you could do on the ugly duckling romantic comedy. Like, normally it's the bookish girl with the glasses, you know, who is going to be made prom queen by the end of the week. But what if it was a guy... There's an athlete at the high school, like a male, female athlete, doesn't matter which, but she's a long distance runner. So her feet or his feet get hammered to shit. Like, I remember a friend of mine went to university with St Kilda midfielder Rob Harvey, famous for the amount of ground he would cover in a game. I think on average, like 20 kilometers a game he would run. And she said he would wear like Birkenstock sandals to uni. And his feet were the most hideous things he'd ever seen. Just like, just beaten beyond recognition, just lumpy, corned up, calloused, blistered, horrible looking things. So,
I mean, it would have had broken toes and, you know, archway problems and all those things that come from, you know, doing your sport.
So that person is kind of reviled for having the ugliest feet amongst this foot fetish group. But one guy chooses to make athlete's foot, the homecoming foot. All right, look, this is my first go at it. I haven't really thought it out. But you could call it athlete's foot, couldn't you? No.
I mean, I think you could. Well, it's a classic. I guess the other story that you could reincorporate is the Cinderella Prince Charming.
Yes.
Because this is literally a woman who loses a shoe at a ball, and then this prince is just determined to find the foot that goes in that shoe. It might be about the fact that, like, she isn't transformed into some magical person. She just has these perfect feet. And he is his kink is perfect feet. And that's why he's willing to go on a citywide hunt to find the owner of one shoe, because he's been sleeping next to that shoe for all the lonely nights in between.
Can I ask, with your feet, do your toes sequentially descend in like height? So your big toe, second toe, third toe, or does the big toe go higher than the second toe go higher than the big toe? Will's looking at his feet, everyone at home.
I am actually looking at my feet for any foot fetish, for any toe pop fans who are getting turned on by this. I'm trying to work out that I think, oh, so on my right, definitely they go down in order. And then on my left, I reckon that the second toe or the first non-big toe is, he might be just slightly ahead. Is that weird to have different ones?
I don't know. I'm going to take off my socks and look at my feet now. Because I know, I'm pretty sure, because I remember being made fun of at school, at swimming carnivals and stuff, because my feet are very sequential in terms of the big one's big and then second one's the next biggest one and so on and so forth. And everyone was like, no, your second toe's got to be bigger than your first. But no, mine are like perfectly planed toes. From the biggest to the littlest, it's like an even gradient. It goes straight down. You could jump a BMX. if you read a BMX up my toes.
So you're talking even as they go up.
I'll hold it up to the camera. Look,
no, so, okay.
Look.
Oh. Look. This is one for the foot fetishes. Oh, my God. It's like somebody has rounded out your foot. That is a perfect ramp. That's like the sails of the Sydney Opera House. That's what it looks like. That's like a Ken Doan Welcome to Australia picture.
Show me your foot. Hold it up to the camera.
How did I not know this
about you? Hold your foot up to the camera. Oh, okay, so all right. I'm going to hang on. Can
298 episodes, 10 years. This is what it has come to. All right, hang on. I'm going to. I think I can only put up my right foot. So, hang on. Oh, is that there? Can you see?
A bit higher. Bit higher.
Oh, there we go.
Okay. All right. Yeah, no, your second and third toes are actually quite long. Your second toe exceeds your first, and your third toe is about on par. With your big toe. Yeah, right. So I don't know. Who has, I mean,
yeah, so
let us know if you're a foot fetishist.
Mine's definitely like my little toe is very small. Then it goes up a bit, kind of in a natural progression. And then there's a real drop off until it gets to the big three.
I just imagine podcast Mike who monitors these calls. You know, often we just pump him for information. But I mean, at what point does he sort of look at this and go, what am I doing? Like he just sees two middle-aged men holding up their bare feet to their webcams to show each other their toes. You're much better than this podcast, Mike. If you wanted to leave, I'd completely understand. You've got bigger fish to fry. Oh, podcast Mike says his feet are the same as mine. Prove it. Hold them up to the camera.
Hold them up to the camera. Put your camera back on. We want to see your feet as well. You know there is some foot. No, he says no, which is fair enough. Technically, he's our employee, and I'm not sure that we can make him do that sort of stuff.
I mean, can you get sued for harassment if you ask to see someone's feet? Because it depends about context, right?
Yes.
Like, if I'm not a foot,
I think so.
If I'm not a foot fetishist, though, and I want to see your feet. I'm going to think of the context in which it's not creepy. Like, I'll give you a scenario in which I run I'm a carpenter. We've just put floorboards in a new house, like hardwood floorboards, and we've lacquered them. And then I've come in to check the next day and I see footprints of the house. And I know it's one of my apprentices. I had three apprentices there. And so I say to them, one of you walked through the bloody house and ruined the lacquering. Take your shoes off. We're gonna work out who it is. That's a non-creepy way to ask to see someone's feet, isn't it?
If you're trying to solve a crime, I'm fine with like, being able to see someone's feet. I'm just saying you can't just go, oh, that lacquer looks pretty smooth. Hey, Charlie, why don't you slip off your work boots and take down those thick bamboo work socks and maybe just... slowly walk on that new lacquered floor. You'd have to prove that it wasn't. I'd like if it came up and somebody said it was, you know, you'd have to prove that it didn't turn you on. I would have, you'd have to get, you know, you in a room with a whole bunch of, you know, feet and see if you started to sweat or get excited.
But that's how people generally do, like dirty perverts do set up things like that by saying, oh, this is an official, like I need to check your underpants or whatever. That's the first thing that came to my mind. Like, so you would probably say there's been a crime. I need to check your feet. Like, so I don't know that I would get away, even if a crime had been committed. I don't know if it's appropriate to look at someone's feet. I mean, if If you're someone, if feet are as attractive to you or as sexual to you as like an exposed breast is to me, then it's all about the context, right? It's all about the who's asking the question. Someone wants to see my feet, who's asking? That's what I would say.
Well, okay. Well, someone unwantedly, you know, using any part of your body like in a sexualization way that made you feel uncomfortable, that you were aware of, probably is inappropriate. But if somebody's looking at your feet and there's no sort of, you don't know that they're secretly getting off on it, it's, I don't know. That's complicated. That's a complicated question.
If a policeman pulled you over and said, get out of the car and drop your dacks, you might be inclined to be like, excuse me, absolutely not. What's this about? Blah, 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 blah. But if I got out of the car and a policeman said, take off your shoes, I would be more inclined to be like, well, yeah, I got nothing to hide. I'll take off my shoes. So I think it really does. It would just sort of depend, right? I mean, I don't know maybe that cop is getting me out to sexually harass me because he wants to see my feet. And I've just walked straight into it. Literally walked straight into it.
Possibly we feel more personal shame that, you know, our genitals and stuff should be covered, whereas we don't feel as much shame about, you know, that your feet should be uncovered. I mean, I live in an area of Australia where people rock barefoot at the shops, you know, around town, not just at the beach, and people seem to be absolutely fine with it in the way that you probably wouldn't be fine if people rocked up to the supermarket with no pants on.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's all about social acceptability, isn't it? Like, we've decided as a society that bare feet is right on the edge, shirtless, right on the edge, balls, out of the question. Balls and penis out of the question.
Well, I guess also, you know, in the cop scenario, it would have to do with which you were most ashamed of. So if I had like a very impressive, you know, that scrotum, but really horrible looking feet, then maybe I'd be like, yes, I can take my pants off, but I'm keeping my shoes on.
I mean, buttocks seem to be readily acceptable now. Like, I see often people walking up from the beach past the shops in G-strings. That's passé now, I'd say, buttocks. So I think the last frontier is genitals. But if you're a foot fetishist, you've been in hog heaven this whole time. All these barefoot people walking around Byron Bay.
I mean, isn't the bikini such a classic example of how there is such a fine line between, you know, what we deem as being inappropriate versus what is appropriate? Because we've just decided now it's the nipple. If your nipple's still in, you're technically wearing a top, right? But only the female nipple. The male nipple, I mean, that's the whole free the nipple movement, isn't it? About the disparity, about the fact that guys can happily, you know, walk around shirtless and nobody really has a problem with it. But if women did the same thing, suddenly it would seem to be a sexualized thing. It just proves how we've just made that up. Like, there's nothing really about that makes any sense. Because the idea that, like, you know, it's still appropriate if you're just covering the nipple, why is that any different to if the nipple was out or otherwise?
Yeah, like if 80% of the breast is showing but just the nipple is covered, how is that somehow more demure?
It's like if, you know, to use the foot example, if you just covered your big toe and the rest of your foot was naked but you just wore a little sock on the big toe, you're like, for modesty.
Gemma, when Gemma used to do her art, she used to do these amazing kind of giant charcoal drawings, and she did a lot of female nudes, and she had they were up in a gallery for a while, and I remember I was working there just selling them one day, and a dude came in, and they're really big pieces, like, you know, I think you've got a couple, don't you, or at least you've got one of her pieces. Yep. And a dude came in and he was like really enthusiastic about one of the pieces, and it was great, and, you know, he's just renovated his house and he wanted to get it, but he had a young daughter, so would the artist mind just removing the nipples, and then he'd buy it on the spot. And I was like, first of all, you don't ask an artist to do that. And second of all, but she's still naked. I mean, it's still, it's not a photo, it's a drawing, and she's still naked. Like, you take the nipples off, who are you protecting? What are you protecting your daughter from with that?
It's like going, you know, saying, look, we love the Mona Lisa, but could you give her a smile? Could you just give her a smile? That's all I ask. Hey, sis, why don't you smile? Well, you look pretty if you smile.
But having said that, I'd be lying if I didn't say when they put nipples on the bat suit, it didn't strike me as like, oh, like that is odd. All of a sudden, like, you're seeing nipples on the bat suit.
Well, that makes no sense, though, because that's just an external nipple. Like, that, there's no reason for that nipple to be there. I mean, you could argue there's not much reason for the male nipples to be there either, but...
Well, there's no reason for a man to be wearing a bat suit, so why does it matter if he has nipples or not? I mean, the whole thing is completely insane.
Well, I guess it's meant to disorient criminals, technically, isn't it? So
I want to rob this bank, but I can't stop staring at his nipples.
Why does he have nipples on his suit? That is going to get them stopping and thinking about the crime and starting thinking about that. So I guess you've got the tactical advantage from that. In fact, I would go a step further if I was Batman. I would have a little button that I could press on the bat suit and a bat scrotum would drop out. Because imagine if you were in a fight and just suddenly... The bat suit has just a massive set of like tow bar style testicles.
So if Batman, one of the reasons...
Tow bar, by the way, also being how a foot fetishist describes their erection.
So if you had a, you know, like Barbie dolls, right? And they, if you took a Barbie doll, if you took the clothes off a Barbie doll and it had nipples, would you think, what's the point of that? Like, why does a little girl not to be playing with a doll that has, that's high beaming?
But little girls have nipples. So wouldn't it almost confuse them more if, like, underneath, you know, Barbie's clothes, she didn't have, like, nipples? I mean, I guess it is still a step to have, like, I mean, anything from the waist down is still pretty confronting to a child. Like... I'm not sure you want Ken to, you know, be in plastic proportion. I feel like that's still a step too far for me. But
I mean, if you are a free the nipple advocate, I wonder if you would sort of extend it to kind of children's toys. Because if you're going to normalize it, and like, hey, we all have them, and you know, women have them, girls have them, then do you then apply that to cartoon characters and toys and that kind of stuff to sort of make it so it's not like this taboo thing? Or does it just make it confusing?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's actually what I'm going to do. That's going to be my new career now that stand-up comedy isn't a thing I can do. I'm going to make very progressive, modern takes on traditional children's toys in my new business, Mr. Potato Cock.
How many... do horses have nipples?
Do horses have nipples? Podcast Mike, can you Google, do horses have nipples?
Like, I assume... Like, I'm guessing that they have nipples like a dog, right? Like, they'd have six nipples that the baby horses come and suckle
I
from?
I assume so, like a cow, right? But I don't actually know what the answer to that is.
Oh, yeah, right. But they don't have an udder. Yeah, can you just look up a mare's nipples, not mare, M-A-Y-O-R.
Although, if any of those come up as well. Like, we'd like to see any mare who's exposed their nipples on the internet.
I guarantee Darren Lyons has definitely exposed his nipples. They're probably fake.
Former Lord Mayor of Geelong, Darren Lyons. And if people don't know who that is, do yourself a favour. Go to the internet right now and Google a picture of his six-pack, his surgically enhanced six-pack.
I did a parade with Darren Lyons, a motorcade with him. It was a... I can't remember what it's called. It's a town just outside of Geelong. They have an international food fair, and they had a parade through the town. And I got to hang out with Darren Lyons and his wife for a day. He's an interesting fellow. Like, it's you understand. Like, when you see someone like that and someone like Donald Trump, you're like, oh. There are some people who just apply the popularity contest to politics, and sometimes they're laughed at, but then sometimes it bloody works. Sometimes you just need enough people to buy into whatever you're selling, and it works, and you get in there, and then what the fuck do you do?
So male horses do not have nipples. This is what we've found out so far. Do female horses have nipples? This is what we want to know, Mike.
I'm surprised he Googled the male one. All right, here we go. The evolutionary reason for this seems to be because the female teat is located behind her hind legs. Did you know that? Tofop has taught me something today. What do we call it? Topop has taught me something today I did not know. So female horses, their teat is behind her hind legs. That's extraordinary to me. Can you see if you can find a photo of a what's a baby horse called? A colt? No.
A foal?
A foal. A foal suckling at its mother's leg.
I mean, if it's behind the hind leg, that means it's just below the... Is it teat or taint? Have we just looked up the wrong thing? Because it feels like...
All right, here we go. Oh, no, it's in front... Right. Well, okay. Oh, yeah, no, that makes... Oh. Well, it's very... Yeah, okay. So it's sort of between the thigh and the abdomen of the horse, I guess. Just below the belly, it looks like. I thought it was behind the leg. But, yeah, right. That seems like a good place to have a nipple. He's found two photos of it. Yeah, great. Okay, save those for later. Now, Will, we were talking when I was up in Byron. We were chatting about the fact that screenwriter Ed Solomon, creator of Bill and Ted and the Men in Black, first Men in Black film, writer, is following us on Twitter. And I thought, seeing as we've both seen the trailer for Bill and Ted's 3, that we could speculate on what we think, what we would like to see happen in this film.
Good. Okay. Well, firstly, how fun was it when we both discovered that? Because Bill and Ted's is one of those movies that we both have incredible affection for, and we've spoken about a lot on this podcast over the years. And it genuinely is one of these movies where I'm like, oh, I'm so glad that there's going to be another one. And I'd been, you know, reading a lot of the stuff that Ed retweeted. There's been some really cool videos about how they came up with the characters in the first place and what the evolution of them were. And it's been really fascinating from a writing perspective just to see these movies that I remember as being so, you know, fantastic and feel like they're exactly how they were conceived actually weren't how they were conceived at all. They went through many iterations to get to the place that they are right now, which... That in itself, I love learning about their writing process and how they got to the place they got to. And I think it's why those movies do feel so great, is because they went through a whole bunch of different versions until they found what exactly worked. And it was the same with the sequel. There was a whole bunch of reasons the sequel eventually became, originally was going to be called Bill and Ted Go to Hell, I think.
Go to Hell, yeah.
But the way they got to Bogus Journey, and then... To see the trailer for Face the Music, that's what it's called, right? Face the Music.
Yeah.
I was genuinely excited because it feels like it's an interesting idea.
Well, there's certain reboots or sequels that you're like the Dumb and Dumber one they did, where they dusted the guys off and they put them in the same costumes and they brought them out and they're like, hey, you guys remember this? And it's kind of just fucking depressing. It's like seeing Kiss. And you're like, oh my God, you guys are just in the same outfits and you're doing the same fucking shit. Like, in real life, people age and their attitudes change. And, you know, I understand that the characters have to still occupy the essence, but it feels like in this trailer that, you know, they're not just coming out and pretending to be teenagers again. They're middle-aged guys who are losers, who never achieved what they wanted to achieve. It's like when we talked about Trainspotting 2. Last week or the week before. It's like the beautiful thing about Trainspotting 2 is it's such a beautiful examination of middle age. The idea of being young and full of all this energy. And, you know, you were saying earlier in this podcast that, you know, you define yourself by what you would love and what you hate and all these kind of things. And then you just get to your middle age and it's like, oh my God, am I just waiting to die? Like all my ambition, the stuff that I wanted to achieve didn't happen. So now I have to be kind of happy with this. But if I'm not happy with this, do I try or am I going to embarrass myself if I go for it? And what I like about this is the idea that these were guys who were meant to change the world and it hasn't happened yet. So what happens now?
Now, hang on. Are you talking about Bill and Ted or is this your tribute to 10 years of TOEFOP?
That's probably why I can identify with it.
It looks like, and again, we're speculating based on the trailer, but it looks like, you know, I love this idea that the promise that they were told, you know, what if you got told that you were the guys who were going to write the song that would unite the universe, right? Because that's kind of the premise, right? The Wild Stallions are going to write this one song that, you know, connects everybody and everything's going to be okay about it. And if you got told that that was your future... And then that didn't happen. How do you deal with the consequences of the thing that you'd been promised and told that would define you never actually happening? And then it gets, I think, you know, where it gets interesting to me, you know, when you're thinking about how this story might come together. And I think, I hope from the way that I've seen Ed Solomon, you know, speak on Twitter, I think this is sort of the process that those guys went through as well, which was then what sort of person do you become? And it toys with that idea of, would you even want to know what your future is? Because does knowing what your future is prevent you from actually achieving what your future is meant to be. So I think there's so many cool themes to play with, and it looks to me like that's, at least from the trailer, that seems to be the starting point of where they're going to tell this story.
And the great thing about having time travel is the sort of central conceit of your film is, unlike Dumb and Dumber 2 or any of these other kind of reboots or whatever, it allows you to revisit the earlier films and the reasons you love the earlier films for a good reason. Like, they're actually built into the main body of the story rather than just like a kind of fan service, you know, hey, you remember this line, you remember this bit? Well, no, they can sort of go back. And I'm like, I don't know if this is the plot. I don't know anything about the film. I'm going to do a Gatesy and try and not learn anything about this film before I see it, because I think I want to enjoy it. I want to at least give it a shot. I get excited about these kind of things, and then I'm always disappointed. But this time, I'm just not going to stay away from trailers and stuff and speculation about the plot. We can speculate. That's fine.
I will. I will say one thing.
Okay.
Because I don't know anything about the plot either.
Okay,
but
good.
I did see that Kevin Smith saw it. And Kevin Smith loved it, but, you know, that's no guarantee it's going to be good, because every time Kevin Smith gets a preview to something, he'll tell you that he loves it. And a few of those movies have been terrible. But the thing that he said that I thought was worth keeping in mind is that Bill and Ted's are family movies.
Yeah.
They were always, that was the appeal of them. Mm. They're not R-rated
Stoner
Silent Bob style comedies.
Yeah.
These are family movies, and I think that this one is also going to be a family movie. And I wasn't disappointed to hear that. I was actually pleased to hear that, because I was like, I don't want to see Bill and Ted suddenly be these sort of edgier versions of who they are. Part of the appeal of it
this isn't your dad's Bill and Ted. This is the modern Bill and Ted. This is a jaded Bill and Ted. I mean, we saw that. Like, that's the brilliant of Bogus. See, Bogus Journey is my favorite one. I think Excellent Adventure is great, but I love how just loose and imaginative they are with Bogus Journey.
I agree.
And the evil Bill and Ted, they are the stoner Bill and Ted. They are, you know, what the misconception of what Bill and Ted are. Bill and Ted are sweet, sweet characters. Yeah. They're kind of like babes in the woods, fish out of water. That's the kind of joy, is they have this very hopeful, naive attitude towards everything, and that's what you want to see. And so it wouldn't make any sense to have them more cynical. What you could do is, because now that they've opened up the door to alternate dimensions, that's what I think, you know, you'll see in this film, is like, this is the timeline where you became this, or this is the timeline where you became that.
And I like the idea of just going, these guys are old. There's no point in them playing anything but being old. And time travel is at the heart of this franchise. It's not just something we've introduced, you know, for the third one.
Yeah.
It's been intrinsic to the plot. The idea of them writing this song was a consistent theme through the movies, and then the idea that they haven't written the song, it's just such a great, if you're talking about a three-beat, you know, set up punchline, the idea that you're taking something that is a core premise of the original movies and then twisting it for the third movie is, I just think there's so much good stuff to work with there. I genuinely am excited about it.
Yeah, I think it's going to be good. I don't know. Is it the same director as the first one? Has Ed Solomon written about that?
You know what? He probably has, but I don't remember.
Yeah. Well, Ed, if you're listening to this show, we're big fans. I don't know how you started following us. I think my suspicion is it's all the Keanu art. We went through the Keanu essence. What did we call it? The Keanuessence. We had about 3 or 4 episodes in a row that was a lot of Keanu artwork, so I'm assuming someone sent that to him, or I've seen him interact with Dave Anthony online, so I'm assuming that maybe you know, following Dave and Dave follows us or something like that, it's led him to us. But whatever, Ed, welcome. Welcome to the Topopperverse.
And we're very excited about your movie.
Podcast Mike said, no, it's not the same director as the original ones. Okay, cool, okay. Cool. Hey, do you want to get to some mail, Will?
Yes, let's do it.
This is from John. Subject is Patreon. Hi, Will and Charlie. I'm trying to subscribe to the Patreon and is saying I have to pay in US dollars. I'm a dinosaur when it comes to computers. Can I pay in Australian dollars? And if not, are there extra charges for the exchange, et cetera, et cetera? Regards, John Gorry. That's a good question, John. I actually don't have the answer to that. Yes, it is in US dollars. I do know that. So that is probably worth letting everyone know. Thank you, by the way, to everyone who's supporting us on Patreon. Not just this show, but Philosophy, the Patreon there, is going crazy as well. And it's really enabling us to do more stuff and get more content out there. And so if you did want to support us, the best way to do that is to go to tofop.com/... Patreon.com/Tofop or Patreon.com/Willosophy. If you're not sure what Patreon is, it's basically crowdfunding. So you can donate an amount that will be deducted from your account every month. So that can be a dollar. It can be up to however much money you feel comfortable spending. And that just means that the show can keep running. We can keep paying Podcast Mike to look at our feet on webcam. We can keep paying James Fosdyke to do Keanu artwork that attracts the attention of famous Hollywood screenwriters. But it is in US dollars, so just be aware, whatever the exchange rate is at the moment, that will be what you're getting charged. If it's 70 cents, it'll be, you know, your extra 30%.
And I would say it's an incredible time because we don't have any other income and a lot of the advertisers have dropped off and all these sort of things as well. We've got a new website that's going to be launched really soon, and a lot of your Patreon money has obviously gone to be us being able to put together this really cool new website, and it's actually going to be a really fantastic hub for all the shows that we do, but also it may well end up being the place where the best link to some of the old episodes are going to be, because some people might have noticed, if you're a TOFOP or a FOFOP listener, that there are early episodes of those podcasts that are no longer up on iTunes. They have a cutoff on the amount of episodes. And so we're exploring at the moment how, if you want to access those old episodes, don't get me wrong, there's some of those early episodes, Charlie and I are happy to walk to the ocean and then tie something heavy around and then sink to the bottom of the ocean. But at the moment, Apple is doing that job for us. So your support to the Patreon obviously helps us pay for the archives and all those things as well.
Tony writes in, "Hey Tofop, hey Will and Charlie, I'm a long time listener. I think I discovered you around episode 5 and have been there ever since." Well, it sounds like Tony got in early and he wasn't too thrown by what he heard. In fact, he's still here. Recent bin related anecdotes and discussion of a possible bin t-shirt triggered a memory for me of an 80s game show back in the UK, but I thought maybe it's worth a look. From memory, it was called 321 and features a character called Dusty Bin. The host was called Ted Rogers, a real old school TV host, and he would introduce the name of the show, 3-2-1, showing three fingers, then spinning his hand to two fingers, then spinning his hand back again to one finger. I was tempted to do a YouTube deep dive, but thought it might be fun to let you guys do it and find out what you come up with at the same time. Thanks for all the years and the laughs and the content. All the best during isolation, Tony. Okay, Mike, how can you look up, what's it called? 3-2-1. Dusty Bin or Ted Rogers. Just give that a bit of a Google and see if you can find a Wikipedia entry. Meanwhile, we'll go to our next letter. This is from Robbie. The subject is the presidents of the United States of America. Hey, Tofop, I love the discussion on 90s music in the last episode. Can confirm that the presidents of the United States of America are awesome live. I saw them at University of New South Wales a few years back. Charlie, if you're not aware, their lead singer, Chris Ballew, has a side project called Casper Baby Pants. So, sounds like Chris is into fairly annoying names for a band. Casper Baby Pants. And he's put out some pretty cool albums of Beatles covers for kids, and he sent us a link to that. By the way, Regurgitator has also turned their hand into some kids' music of late. It's maybe some good tunes for Iona, perhaps. Anyway, love the show, guys. Keep it up. Robbie. Iona likes listening to actual metal. I put on some heavy metal the other day. Iron Maiden. Because a lot of heavy metal has kind of like, especially the old school 70s metal, it's all like...
Sorry, what we should say officially, considering the subject matter previously on this podcast, say it again. What was the band?
Iron Maiden.
Excellent! It's a Bill and Ted's reference.
I'm totally metal, dude. Heavy metal music, when you listen to the lyrics, it's all about dragons and sailing like galleons and all this kind of stuff. It sounds like a nursery rhyme anyway. And it's all quite melodic and stuff. She's very much into her metal. Okay, so Mike Howell has sent us a photo of 3-2-1 with...
Michael, not Mike Howell. You've
damn it.
You've done it again.
I've done it again.
You've used the wrong pronouns for our producer. You called your new girlfriend by your old girlfriend's name.
Oh, God, that's so embarrassing. Our podcast Mike has sent us a link to Dusty Bin. So this looks vaguely familiar to me. Do you recognize Dusty Bin?
I don't. I really don't. It's actually quite terrifying to me because it is. It's an old school guy in a sort of, you know, blue jacket, so old school TV. And it really looks like the sort of photo you might see if that bin's grown up and just done an interview with Oprah about the fact that that TV presenter touched him for years because...
I mean, isn't that the worst thing? I had exactly the same instinct looking at that photo. I was like, I don't know who that guy is, but I wonder if he's a pedophile. Like, it just looks like a pedophile. I mean, I'm not going to Elon Musk him.
Well, a binophile. I think that his kink was sticking his dick in bins. Like,
all right. So podcast Mike. They sent us a link to 321. 321 was a British game show. It ran for 10 years between 1978 and 1988. It was based on a Spanish game show called Un, Dos, Tres, Responde o Te Ves, and was a trio of three shows in one. So it was a quiz show, a variety show, and a game show. The show was a huge success, consistently pulling in large ratings. The first series, though, was intended as a summer filler. It checked it up to 16.5 million viewers. Fuck, can you imagine if a show today got 16.5 million viewers? That's insane. You just forgot how big television was.
I have a very successful TV show, but if we, in our 10 episodes of every season, we get about that many viewers. Like in an entire season of shows. But apparently this garbage bin were like dominating.
When I was on Home and Away, a good episode, like where they were happy with it, if it was over a million, that was like a good night for them. And then I checked the ratings the other day and it's like a good night for them is now like half a million. 600,000 is considered like good.
They've got to get 16.5 million. A sentient garbage bin to move into Summer Bay. That's the trick.
The final Christmas special was broadcast on December 24th, 1988. It attracted 12.5 million viewers. Cancel it. Only 12.5 million. Bullshit. Cancel it. Ted Rogers claimed in an interview in 1996 that the Oxbridge lot got control of TV and they didn't really want it. It was too down market for them. We were still getting 12 million viewers when they took it off after 10 years. These days, if a show gets 9 million viewers, everyone does a lap of honor. He said that in 96.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if he's still alive, but he might be rolling in his grave if he is, in fact, still living. Okay. So the overall objective of the game was to survive elimination through three parts of the show and try and unravel a series of cryptic clues in order to win the star prize. This sounds like a kind of show you'd like, Will. You like your bloody game shows and your strategy shows and all that kind of stuff, and you especially love anthropomorphized bins.
I mean, what if I love this so much that I decide I'm going to reboot it, but you have to play the bin? Because no one has thought more about what it's like to be a bin, and you are looking for acting work. If I came to you and I said, look, one of the networks is coming to us. They want to do a reboot of 321. Will's going to be the host, but we want you to play the bin. Yeah. Would you be up for that?
Yeah, but I want it to be like a dark, gritty reboot of what's his name? Dusty Bin. Dusty Bin. Like Dusty Bin has, he's sick and tired of people dumping rubbish in him that isn't his owner. And anytime someone comes, he's got a short fuse. In fact, maybe he's had some substance abuse problems because people keep dumping alcohol, needles go into him all the time. He's like been in and out of bin rehab. It just gives him some edge.
And since people have been composting, he's getting no fresh fruit and vegetables. He's getting no actual good nutrients.
I should say, actually, I was just up in the Northern Rivers visiting you and Amy and other friends and just having a bit of a holiday. And our accommodation, we had this apartment in Brunswick Heads. And when I did the big cleanup, I went out because there's like four apartments in this building and there was no recycle bin marked for my unit. There was just none. And I was like, shit, what do I do? And here's where I'm a hypocrite, Will. Here's where the tables were turned. I dumped my recyclables in someone else's bin and fucking got the fuck out of there. I really like it. It really was something I wrestled with. I actually took the rubbish back up and I was like, can I leave it in the Airbnb for them to dispose of? Because I could argue, well, there's no bin to put them anywhere. But in the end, I was like, no, I'm just going to, wasn't a lot of stuff. The bins were empty because it had just been collected. It was a fresh bin. And I figured, well, you know, it's just some kind of wrappers and things like that. Just a little, some minimal recyclables. But I became what I loathe.
It's what you do.
You either die a hero, Will, or live long enough to dump in someone else's.
Well,
bin.
Here's the thing. You're on holidays. You know what you do on holidays. Sometimes you just, you know, you go to bed much later than you go to bed. You eat some food you wouldn't normally eat when you're at home. And you know what? You're on holidays. You put some rubbish in some other people's bins.
All right, we may have to get to this another time. Maybe we'll save 1, 2, 3 because my wife is texting me. I need to get down to the living room. I assume it's a baby emergency. Thank you to everyone listening for the show. We should tell people that there's a bonus episode. If you are listening to this one, guess what? There's a little bonus episode we recorded actually prior to this one.
Yeah, which it also may have come out prior to this one, depending on, because we're recording this one on a Tuesday, and so we might not be able to turn it around for Wednesday, but you will be hearing one on Thursday, July the 2nd, because that is 10-year anniversary since the first episode of TOEFOP was published. So we thought we should at least do something for that. So there's a sort of half an hour bonus episode where we look back at simpler times when we started doing this podcast a decade ago. But if you haven't heard that one yet, I think, you know, we'd love to just say thank you again to everybody who's been involved in, you know, supporting this podcast over the years and meaning that we could have this conversation for the last decade, which is, I mean, it's
ridiculous
when you think about it, isn't it? That we have kept doing this.
I know. What is wrong with this? And not even just this. We have an AFL podcast that we do as well.
We did some of it in this podcast today. In fact, we referred to AFL 3 times in this podcast today and then talked about other things. So it's pretty much an episode of Two Guys, One Cup.
Which you can find on tofop.com as well. Is a new episode of Philosophy out, Will?
Yeah. In fact, when people are hearing this, Alice Fraser will be up. But if you haven't heard the Kurt Fernley one from last week, I do highly recommend that. Kurt is an Australian legend, and Alice Fraser is an absolute cracker episode as well. So some good ones coming up, plenty in the back catalogue of Philosophy. And there are some FOFOP episodes. I am currently stuck on episode 299. Of TOEFOP, but I've been waiting until we get closer because I think this is 298 of TOEFOP. And so I'm holding off on doing the 300th episode until we get to the 300th episode of this as well. So they will both drop in a couple of weeks.
I appreciate it. So we can cross the finish line together. One is not better than the other. We are both champions.
Exactly. That's what, you know, like when somebody falls in a race and then another guy just goes back and puts his arm around and just helps them limp across the line. Well, we're both limping. We both fell over. We crashed into each other and then we got up and the only way we could get across the line was together.
And also, don't forget to check out Redbubble to get your TOEFOP merch. James Fosdyke's great t-shirt designs, mugs, posters, curtains, shower curtains, other stuff is at redbubble.com/people/Mr. Foz. Podcast Mike will put a link in the episode description. I'm Charlie Clawson.
I'm Will Anderson.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
I mean, if you want. It's up to you.